The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun there today with the back rubs and references to Man City. I think they've won the title just too many times. That's just the number, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite incredible. And what a weekend of soccer it was. All right, Anthony, Prime Minister Netanyahu is due to ask President Reuven Rivlin today for a two-week extension on the time that he's been allowed to form a government. How much longer can this time be extended?
That's it. I mean, the original amount of time that is usually extended is 28 days. That can be extended by another 14 days. And in fact, when President Rivlin asked Prime Minister Netanyahu to form the new government, he already gave him an extended period of 42 days. And I think that was just taking into consideration the fact that it was Pesach and it was Yom HaTzmaut and it was, you know, all the Chagim. And so the time that was required to form this government would most likely be need to be extended. And indeed, that's the way that it has worked out. And now the Prime Minister has announced, or the Likud at least has announced, that they plan to ask the President for another two-week extension using the same excuses. You know, we've been in holidays and it's been Pesach and we haven't really had enough time to get through all the issues. But once this further two-week period has been extended to a total of 56 days, then if a government is not formed by the end of that period, then there are two choices. Either the president will ask another party to form a government and we'll begin the whole process again of trying to form a new government by another party. In this case, I expect it will probably be Kahol Levan if we get to that. Or alternatively, go to new elections if a government can't be formed. So it's obviously in our interest to make sure that there is a government formed of some sort or another, rather than to force us to go to another round of elections, which may not produce anything different from the original round of elections. So it's not clear that that's really going to make much difference or help the situation. So we're very much hoping that a government will be formed of some type or another. Those, of course, who support different parties have different expectations about what their hopes are in terms of the formation of the government. But it's clearly not an easy process, even though, you know, at the time that the election result was announced, it was kind of it was broadcast almost as being obvious that the Prime Minister had a majority. They counted up all the seats on the right of the political spectrum and said that's what his majority in the Knesset will be. But apparently, it's not quite as obvious as all that.
Do we know what the issues are? Is there any sense of
that? Well, there are always issues. There's no such thing as just kind of forming a coalition government that involves three or four different parties, each of which comes to the table with their own demands, and each one understanding that they are potential kingmakers, because if they don't participate in the government, it could mean the difference between not having a government at all or having a government. And so I think that each individual party, no matter how small or large they are, they all understand that they have the potential to be kingmakers. And so, you know, they come with their own list of demands. And, you know, the demands that we've been seeing in the press recently really relate more to the religious parties, who seem to have a very well-developed list of demands that they are required to be fulfilled in order for them to sit in the government. On the other hand, we know that Avigdor Lieberman has really opposed a lot of the things that the religious parties are demanding, and said that if the Prime Minister gives in to those demands, that he won't sit in the government that has that as part of its policy agenda. And so there clearly are issues. I mean, Kahlon, for example, is saying that he would like to be Minister of Finance, but he's not prepared to be Minister of Finance if the agenda is going to be to increase taxes. That seems to be where the Prime Minister wants to take the economic agenda of the country. So, you know, there are many, many, many issues that need to be resolved and that at the moment seem almost insurmountable. And so therefore, you know, along with this request to extend the period that's required to form a government, there seems to now be a feeling within the country that maybe a government in the form that we expect, that we had expected, may not be formed. And in a sense, I quite like that idea because it means that it potentially brings the Kahol Lavan party back into the mix. And there is an alternative which says, get rid of all the other smaller parties, don't form a government with them. Likud and Kahol Lavan together hold enough seats to command a significant majority in the Knesset. If they can somehow find a way to resolve issues between themselves and find a common agenda to form a government, that would probably be the strongest outcome for Israel.
And it would be quite, and actually an unusually strong government, because normally the coalitions are so precariously balanced that that the smaller parties hold an unnatural amount of power.
That's true. I mean, unusual in the sense that, you know, this would kind of be in a certain way kind of a national unity government, which we haven't seen in Israel for many, many decades. As you rightly point out, it would have a very, very strong majority in the Knesset, which means that every little issue that comes up that perhaps annoys one party or another doesn't threaten the government. It's really just the two parties, and as long as they're happy, the government will continue to exist. What we've seen in previous Knessets is that because each party has the ability to bring the government down, each party within the coalition has the ability to bring the government down, every little point that comes up, I mean, even the issue of, for example, I don't know, public work on Shabbat, which annoyed the religious parties and which almost brought the government down because they threatened to leave the coalition. And if they did that, then there would just be no majority in the Knesset. So this is potentially a very strong solution. We don't see any signs of it heading towards that direction at the moment, but we can't rule it out. It's certainly a possibility.
All right, Anthony, moving on to another subject completely. Eurovision 2019 kicks off in Tel Aviv this week. What are the events surrounding the competition? I thought it was sort of a one-night wonder, but it appears as though this is going to go on for the entire week.
It is going on not only for the entire week, it's really started some time ago with all the participants coming to Tel Aviv for rehearsals, and their teams and their entourages, dancers and backing bands and whatever. They've already been through a whole series of rehearsals, over the past few weeks, at the Tel Aviv, exhibition ground, which is where the competition will take place, and surrounding the whole event. First of all, it's not a one-night wonder because, in fact, they have three official events. So tomorrow night and Thursday night will be the semi-final events. And those singers that get through the semi-finals will appear on Saturday night at the final. And that's kind of the one-night wonder that we get to see a lot of on the international stage and on TV around the world. But be that as it may, it's expected that 200 million viewers will actually watch the event, at least the Saturday night event. But already last night there was the orange carpet event, which took place at Habima Theatre outside, with the various singers and participants in the event coming along in their outfits, showing off to the TV cameras and being interviewed and having a real sort of glam event at Habima last night. All around Tel Aviv, people have prepared for Eurovision. There are all kinds of programs to welcome not only the participants, but people who've come to actually see the event, people who've come to watch. The Tel Aviv municipality has implemented programs to try and get visitors to learn a little bit of Hebrew with local Tel Aviv residents, to share a Shabbat over the weekend with local residents of Tel Aviv. So to try and somehow get a mix between the locals and the visitors who are coming along to the event. And of course, you see advertising wherever you go. The weather has turned very summery, so a lot of events along the beachfront. And of course, with it, a much heightened state of security. There's a lot of visible security as well as invisible security going on. Certainly, the security services on very high alert this week, as all the visitors fled Tel Aviv. Not everything has been so positive. There were many stories about hotel prices being made exorbitantly expensive for this particular event, and people not taking up on it, so hotels being left effectively empty without people being prepared to pay the prices, and that prices have had to be reduced significantly in order to attract people into the hotel. So not everything has been particularly positive, but I think overall It's going to be an exciting week in Tel Aviv.
No doubt. No doubt about that. And, Anthony, finally, Israelis have won medals in different international competitions over the past few days. Can you give us some sense of what these achievements are?
Yeah, so first of all, let's talk about judo, which Israel is really strengthening its position in judo around the world. We've already seen Israelis doing really well in international judo competitions, winning Olympic medals for judo, and Israeli judo is really going from strength to strength, and we saw that in Baku over the weekend when there was a Grand Slam championship held in Baku in Azerbaijan, and three Israelis won medals. There was a bronze medal that went to Geffen Primor, there was a silver medal that went to Tohar Butbul, and of course the great Sagi Mukhi, who's also an Olympic medalist, actually won a gold medal in his particular category, and that's a massive achievement because he's actually not participated in any competition so far in 2019 where he has not been a medal winner. So he's really a consistent performer and he's doing really well. And we're very hopeful that Israeli judokas will do well ahead of the preparations, or during the period of the preparations ahead of the next Olympic Games, which is due to take place in about a year from now in Tokyo. So that's really, really exciting. And in addition to, by the way, just as an aside on the judo side, it was announced from Iran that the Iranian government has agreed to allow Iranian judoka to compete with Israelis in the future. And that's a big moment for not only for Israel, but for Iran. And we've seen some really unpleasant situations when Iranians have come up against Israelis and have withdrawn from the competition and have snubbed their Israeli participants, which has been very unpleasant. So this is good news that's come from the Iranian Judo Federation. And then in addition to that, Israelis have done really well in an Olympiad, in a physics Olympiad, which took place in Australia. This is the Asian Physics Olympiad, open to high school children, and had something like 200 participants from 25 countries. Israelis won gold, silver, and bronze medals at this particular event in different categories. It's an event which asks participants to participate in 2 5-hour long university level exams, and also in theory, and then also they have to run an experiment as part of the physics Olympiad. And what's interesting for me is that next year in 2020 this event will be held in Israel. This is the Asian Physics Olympiad. So well done to those Israelis who won these medals and did brought credit to Israel for their achievements. And of course, this just means that next year's event in Israel will have a lot of interest because of the achievements of our local participants and the high school kids who were there.
Absolutely incredible and amazing about the judo. That is a very, very real a real achievement, especially with development in coming from Iran.
That, I think that's a great development, and you know, I think we shouldn't underestimate the strength of Iranian judo. I mean, you know, the judo world is different from the usual kind of athletic world, where the strong judo nations are countries like Georgia and countries like Azerbaijan and countries like Bulgaria, for example, who have produced some amazing judoka. And I think that Israel has done really well to stand up on the international stage alongside competitors that come from those countries. And of course, Iran too has been a very, very strong judo country, and it's been a shame that Israelis have not had the opportunity to compete against the Iranian counterparts. And I think that this will really allow Israelis to stand on the international stage and with their heads held high, given that they've been achieving so many good things in recent times.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for the Israel Report, informative and interesting. This is your best place to get that news. It is 8 o'clock. We'll chat to Anthony same time, same place tomorrow. Here's your news with Zanati.